Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Woo! Breathe a sigh of relief. Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. You're on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCannon here, and Phil Bush here with you.
It is Scrambled Eggs after dark.
Yes, Scrambled Eggs after dark. We're going to squeeze in a quick podcast here for you to kind of celebrate the first round win and talk a little bit about the second round matchup with Colorado. And, oh boy, Phil, we're going to talk about a lot today. One thing we will not do a duet of what a pro wants. We will just talk about what a exciting game it was. I think we were all stressed out a little bit at halftime, but this team, I think, proved its mettle in the second half of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get if some people were scared, worried, concerned, terrified, vomiting, you know, all of those things during that first half. But, you know, all's well that ends well, and it ended up in a butt-kicking, and, you know, you want to take that from a 2-15 matchup.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, I mean, if you didn't watch the game, you would have seen the scores like, Marquette had an easy win. Mm-hmm. They absolutely did not.
Right.
It was the furthest thing. They had an easy half, but they did not have an easy win. You know, give credit, Western Kentucky, they played a very good game. They definitely shot the ball well in that first half, made Marquette sweat. I thought they did a good job denying Oso, probably frustrating him a little bit. I thought he and Tyler may have been a little out of sync after going six games without playing together. But to shout out another podcast out there, I thought Friday was my favorite episode of the K1 and Stewie show. Cam Jones and Stevie Mitchell both stepped up big time for their team in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, we need to talk about who was the most impactful or important player in that game. But Cam Jones has absolutely turned the corner from wherever he was in January when he was struggling, wasn't hitting shots, whatever.
Right.
He scored 28 points, 5 of 6 from 2, 5 of 10 from 3, 3 of 5 from the free throw line, but whatever. But, like, Cam took on the scoring load, right? Like, and, you know, Tyler had 18, Stevie had 16, David Joplin had 13, so it's not like he had to go all by himself, but he was ridiculous, especially in the second half. I think he, you know, not dissimilar to the Vermont opener last season, you know, Cam Jones, you know, took probably 10, 12 points a row at one point in the second half in that game. And so between him and just the pure energy plays that Stevie Mitchell had, you know, steals and breakaways and, you know, take it, you know, running with inbound passes and all that stuff. I mean, those two really stepped up and made a huge difference for Marquette.
Yeah, I think more or less all of the top 6-7 rotation guys had a hand in that game. And we could probably touch on a little bit of all of them. But yeah, I think all your points about Cam Jones are spot on. His shot, his confidence around the rim, his decision-making on offense, they're all there. There was a stretch there that he was in a little bit of a funk there in early Big East play. Just wasn't shooting the ball very well for whatever reason. But he's got his shot back at the exact right time. And Marquette needed just about all of them to just erase that deficit and pull away in the second half. Love to see that from Cam, and more of that, please, going forward. And I think Marquette could have a nice run here. And you mentioned Stevie. That's the other side of this. Stevie, 16 points, 6 of 9 from the floor, 4 rebounds, and then 3-3-3, 3 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks. Just just the typical glue guy, Stevie Mitchell type game. He was more than a glue guy. He was just an excellent player on Friday. He energy plays, right? The thing with Shaq and Marquette, it's EGBs, energy generating behaviors, and Stevie did that so much. Just his effort on defense really kind of disrupted the rhythm that Western Kentucky had found offensively in that first half, and then Yeah, I mean, that put back late in the second half where that when he got that rebound and put it back in and got the foul, that was just one of those plays that you kind of felt like, all right, we're going to win this, right? They're going to pull this out. Right. And just a great game from Stevie Mitchell.
Well, and how many of the offensive rebound putbacks has Stevie Mitchell had in the last six weeks? Like, I feel like that's
way more than you would. Yeah, way more than you would expect from a guy his size. That's for sure. Right.
Well, and it feels like it's a skill set that he's developed in, you know, out of nowhere, kind of in the last 6 weeks. And I know it's really just a continuation of his effort and his energy and all that stuff. But like, just the number of times he sneaks in there, gets an offensive rebound and puts it back is ridiculous. And so, you know, Stevie and Cam really lit. And you know what's crazy to me as we're talking about, deservedly so, Cam and Stevie, we haven't even touched on the two gentlemen that had double-doubles in the game, including right. one who is coming back from significant injury and is a consensus All-American.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about in this game. And, yeah, we could move on to the next thing. But, yeah, we can talk about your precious Jop Wagon here in a minute. He had an excellent game. But, yeah, we blew right past the story of the game pregame, and that was the return of Tyler Kolek. And he looked fine. He looked more than fine. He looked like an All-American again.
He played more than anyone else on the team. He's back, like fullback.
Yeah, and I think that just goes to show that the plan last week and the week before was the right plan. I really don't know of any Marquette fans that really disagreed with it either,
right.
myself. I can't speak for everybody, but I think generally speaking, from people I talk to, Marquette fans, you know, friends and whatnot, I think we were all kind of in alignment. Like, yeah, it would have been cool to win those games and get Tyler on the floor, but this week is more important. And I think that was clearly the plan from the coaching staff, the training staff, and Tyler. It's like, yeah, I want to play, but I want to win next week more. And that's what happened. And Tyler was seemingly 100%, didn't look to be hampered one bit, came out and hit two threes early in the first half. Didn't hit another one the rest of the game, but he was his vintage self as far as just dribbling in and out of traffic, making plays, making good passes. And like you said, he had a double-double. He had 11 assists to go along with 18 points. Great to see Kolek back on the floor and just that the offense clicking and just moving and sharing the ball the way we are used to seeing it.
Right, right. Yeah, and just seeing Tyler out there in the first, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes, and just seeing him doing Tyler things. And at one point, you know, it was kind of, you know, it was not dissimilar to the UConn title game where, you know, there just wasn't a lot of scoring. Next thing you know, Tyler's putting Jack in a couple of threes and making them, like, I know for me in that first 12 minutes, just being, I thought Tyler was fine, but seeing he was fine and comfortable and there was no wincing and there was no hesitation or anything like that, that really, you know, made me feel comfortable that A, he's good for the long term, but B, that Marquette was going to win the game, because, you know, there were reasons to doubt a little bit in the final 8 minutes of that second half, certainly. But yeah, seeing Tyler back and doing his thing was really lifts the spirits, right? It really, really says that this team can operate, you know, especially the way Cam and Stevie played. If we get those three plus some combination of Oso, David Joplin, et cetera, playing at high level, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to win the national title, but I'm saying that that combination of talent has the ability to beat anyone in the field.
It's the formula you want. I mean, going all the way back to the preseason or just after Maui when Marquette was a top five team in the country, this was the team Marquette you hoped to have when the postseason began, minus, I mean, Sean Jones, of course. I mean, he's not playing. But other than that, this is what you would have hoped to see, right?
Right.
I mean, you would – the team shooting the ball the way they are, Tyler playing the way he is, development and – you know, progression from guys like David Joplin and Ben Gold. This is kind of what you hoped to see this team doing when the tournament began. And just one game in, but, you know, overall grade has to be an A.
Yeah, yeah. I, I mean, it's not, you know, and we'll talk maybe about the deficiencies a little bit coming up, but, you know, it may not totally be exactly what you would want to see start to finish, but what we got as a result and the players and the team, sure, there's stuff to nitpick, but yeah, I agree. It's an A grade for the overall team, and, you know, and hopefully we continue that, because, hey, this is one down, five more to go, right?
Exactly. And before we move on, obviously, I think we have to give some shout-outs to your guy, David Joplin.
Yes, please.
Putting up 13-11 in an NCAA tournament game. It, you know, Shaka has challenged him so much since he got on campus, really, to improve other aspects of his game. I mean, it started with his fitness and being able to, you know, play full games and run more and be more active defensively, and he's responded there. And this past year, he's challenged him to, these past 2 years, challenged him to be more than a shooter and to give more effort rebounding the ball. And boy, did he respond in a big way on Friday. 11 rebounds. Is that a career high for Joplin?
Oh, 100%. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think he's had more than seven.
Yeah, so good time to have it. And if he wants to have 12 or more in the next one, that'd be great too.
Right. Well, we, you know, who knows? Not to jump ahead of ourselves, we may need it or whatever. But first of all, here's to David. Second of all, yes, absolutely. And it was, I have to admit, the first half from Mr. Joplin was less than desirable. You know, in fact, I don't think he played more than 7 or 8 minutes in that first half. I think he got you know, an early foul, and then just he was not able to stay with his assignment. Tyrone Marshall went off for quite a few points in that first half, so. You know, tried to switch it up, go to Chase, go to the Ben Gold, Oso Iguodaro lineup, etc. So, you know, the first half he didn't play particularly well, but really responded to the second half coaching. And I feel like in the last 10 minutes, it was as if he became a man possessed, because it seemed that there was probably 4 or 5 minutes there where every defensive possession, David Joplin came down with the rebound. I mean, he had 7 defensive rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds. You know, it, for him, a pedestrian 33% from three, but 2 or 3 from inside the arc. And boy, I mean, if you can get 11 rebounds out of David Joplin, you're doing something right. Yeah, that is pure hustle and effort from him. And again, let's harness Tyler, David, Cam, Stevie, you know, and if Oso, who had a down game for Oso, like, let's be honest, that was probably one of his, you know, worst games this season. Like, and I'm not saying that there was anything particularly wrong with him or anything like that. He did have 5 blocks, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. He just, you know, couldn't, you know, it was 2 of 7 from the field. So, scoring was just not with him, and he looked a little tentative. But, you know, even still, even with a less than, you know, productive Oso, that was, you know, especially the second half, was an outstanding performance.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I don't want to, like, harp on the negative too much, but, you know, if we want to give the complete grade and not just say everything was perfect, because, yeah, it was a great game, great win. But, yeah, they were trailing by 7 at halftime. So I would say among the things that probably went wrong in that first half, obviously Western Kentucky got a little hot from 3 there. There was a stretch where they hit 3 quick 3-pointers, and they are a team that, while a decent shooting team, don't attempt a lot, and they decided to start firing away and hit 3 very quickly, and that'll, you know, erase a deficit and build up a lead for you. And then, I think you kind of touched on it there. Oso did not have his best offensive game. I thought he made enough of an impact on the other end. You mentioned the rebounding and the blocks. So, I mean, he helped his team win in other ways, and, you know, setting screens, those things don't show up in the box score. But, yeah, he wasn't able to finish around the rim like he usually would. He didn't have many good looks at that push shot that he likes to do. Not his best offensive game, but they didn't need his best offensive game because a lot of other things went well for the team as a whole. And he had his role to play today, and it worked out. But yeah, what else would you say was maybe a reason that things got off to a little bit of a ragged start there in the first half?
I don't know. It's a good question. I just think it, like, in the, especially in the last 10 minutes of that first half, I think Marquette kind of got into a funk offensively and fell in love with the three. I mean, on the day, I think we took, I'm doing napkin math as we go, 25, 28, 35.
As you do,
we took 36 threes, right? Oh, yeah. Mm. That's all the way at the bottom. Duh. 36 threes, which is not totally normal for us. So I think for a while we fell in love with threes, which have weird rebounds, which then feed into Western Kentucky's, you know, run and gun type of style. And I think they just struggled to set up defensively. And, you know, they just got out of themselves. They weren't attacking the rim. And it was weird stuff, right? Like, I don't know if you remember the first half where Cam Jones kind of turned the corner, drove the lane, and missed the layup quite significantly, but he was wide open. like there was nobody around him. And I was like, how did that happen? And I think he just was so shocked there wasn't a defender in front of him. He missed. So the team was out of sorts offensively in that sort of way in the first half.
Yeah. And again, this is not something I have like a stat or even like a synergy breakdown to really back up. But I felt there were just like sometimes, especially when they were struggling, that they were getting to the rim like close enough to attempt a layup and then just kicking it out for a three, when maybe if you had took another step or did a little pump fake in the lane, you might have gotten those, you know, one of those layups that, especially like some of the acrobatic ones that you get from Cam and Tyler that look so tricky, but just always like a beautiful finish around the rim. And I felt like they, in other words, almost passed too much as far as for threes as opposed to getting the layups. But I think they figured that out in the second half. And I think they got a few more of those buckets in the lane, especially Cam, and then, but also the three started falling too. So whatever wasn't working, I think the team made the adjustment in the locker room, and they really got it cooking in the second half. And they erased that deficit pretty quickly too. I mean, they were down seven.
It was before the under 16 timeout that they had tied it back up, because Western Kentucky took a timeout, I think, with like 17 minutes left in the second half after Marquette had tied it up. So
I remember in our little group chat, I think we had a discussion like, yeah, we're not panicking yet, but if we get to the under 16 and this gets worse, I might start to panic a little bit. You know, I was actually on the invited on by Doug Russell and Armin Sayin on 97.3 The Game up there in Milwaukee, did a little pregame radio hit with them. And one of the things I said in that segment was, because of Marquette's balance offensively and defensively, we really shouldn't panic if they get down early. And if they're down big late, yeah, we could panic then. But I even said, I think if Marquette were to fall behind by like 10 points, I wouldn't panic. I had that in my head as that second half was going. It's like I said on the radio, like not even 30 minutes ago, I wouldn't panic. So I'm not going to panic. And yeah, they were fine. They got it done. So it was all good.
Well, the other thing that you said on the radio show that had me in my feelings in that first half was, you know, because you were asked, what is it going to take for Western Kentucky to kind of challenge Marquette, or what could go wrong? And you were like, well, they could, you know, they don't take a lot of threes, but they could really start hitting them. And if they hit them at volume, you know, we could be in trouble. And sure enough, Marshall and Lander and a couple of guys, well, actually just Marshall really hit two.
Yeah,
or
what
three
was that number 11 that they had? I forget his name already. He was like their 40% shooter. He hit a couple of them too. Yeah.
Yeah. So they started hitting a string together and the lead blossomed, and it's like, oh boy, what did you do, Joe? But I guess in all seriousness, at halftime, if stop at halftime, if you had to put it on a 1 to 10 scale, how worried were you?
Like 10, where I was like ready to set myself on fire. I'd say I was at a 4. You know, I wasn't feeling great, but I wasn't feeling great, but I was also not willing to like put the mortgage on the money line for them to come back either. But I was not ready to totally panic. It's like, well, this is not good. But I was confident that they had all the tools you need to come back from double digits, and as it was, a 7-point deficit. I mean, 7-point deficit can disappear in the blink of an eye, and it did. Like you said, it was gone before the under 16. It's like, oh, now we got a 16-minute game that we got to win, and that's exactly what they did, and they won it convincingly.
Right, right. Yeah, I was, four is fair. I was probably like a 3, right? Like, I didn't enjoy the last half of that first half, and it was a little bit of like, well, I suppose if we lost the first half, we could lose the second half, and that would be real bad. And I think more so what had me more worried than anything else was just because, you know, the bracket for all intents and purposes has kind of opened for Marquette a little bit. Now, yeah, you know, and any opponent is a good opponent, right? And you got to play the games and anyone can beat anyone. But when you look at the upsets that have occurred either today or yesterday, Thursday or Friday, you know, Marquette's odds of getting to at least an Elite Eight, if not a Final Four, have gone up since the bracket kind of came out. And that was the thing where I was like, oh no, not again this year. We can't, you know, and we can still get there, right? Because it was the round of 32 where we lost to Michigan State last year, even though the bracket had opened up. So that could still happen. But that was what was going through my thought is, are we just going to boot this because we've got a good run to the Elite Eight ahead of us? And, you know, the team won anyway, right? They reasserted themselves. They dominated the second half. So should not have.
That was another thing Doug and Armin were asking me about the path opening up with Kentucky losing on Thursday. And what I was saying, look, Marquette can't – I started talking like a coach. I'm like, well, I can't get there yet. We got to beat Western Kentucky first and then worry about one other game. But the very simple fact is, yeah, nothing is guaranteed, and you got to win the games that are ahead of you before you get too excited about anything. But if you had a basic choice, would you rather have single digits ahead of you or double-digit seeds ahead of you?
Right.
Obviously, you would rather have double-digit seeds ahead of you because that's going to increase your odds because those are the teams that you are more likely to be favored by more than the single-digit seeds. Kentucky was a very popular pick to get to the Elite Eight, if not the Final Four or National Championship game. They're out now. Now, so Marquette has to beat a 10 seed on Sunday and then either NC State or Oakland after that. And then they are set up to go to the Elite Eight and a chance to go to the Final Four. So, yeah, can't complain about the road, but can't get too excited about it either because you have to travel it first. So I guess you just can't complain, but I can't get excited because then I feel like you're jinxing things. And that's why we're stupid fans. We feel like we're jinxing or being superstitious about things, but it just makes me always hesitate to say things like that. But the fact is, it's been a good couple days.
Right. Yeah. It's now, I mean, you know, there's arguments to be had that Marquette's next opponent was underseeded, and, you know, because on KenPom, Colorado is a top 25 team. So that's, you know, not typical for a two seed to face in the round of 32. But also, we know it was a weird bubble and there was a bunch of seeding issues with this tournament, and, you know, so because of the small bubble, some quality teams got bumped in seed lines or whatever. But, you know, you've got a 10 seed, like you said, who's a top 21 KenPom team. But if you get by there, you've got an 11 seed that's a top 60 KenPom team. North Carolina State's 53. And then, you know, Oakland is a 14 seed that's all the way down at KenPom 130, right? So, you know, it depending on what happens on the Houston side, right? Like, if for some inexplicable reason Houston gets knocked off, the two toughest games on paper that Marquette could have faced, you know, would be essentially Colorado and, you know, and you know, somebody like Texas A&M or something like that, right? Like, that's, you know, that's not typical for the bracket, but hey, this is March.
Yep. Those things are unpredictable. Some guy we've never heard of hit 10 three-pointers and knocked out Kentucky.
Pride of Pilwaukee. Unexpected.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. like he wasn't even like a super like big time high school star in that area because he was a Division II player. And then
he didn't start. He's a bench player. He's 24. He went. He hit 10 threes, scored 32 points, no rebounds, or maybe no. He had 2 rebounds, no assists. You know, like it was just a crazy stat line out of nowhere.
Just a absolute chucker. He got it done, and he's going to be like in March Madness highlight reels for the rest of his life. So good to him. Maybe Marquette will see him in Dallas next week. But before that happens, Marquette will have to get by the Colorado Buffaloes, who of course knocked off Florida in a game that saw 202 points scored. Whew!
I hope you took the over.
Yeah, that was a barn burner. That was a wild afternoon after the Marquette game. You know, that game and the Auburn-Yale game both going down to the wire at the exact same time. I was watching those at a bar. And, yeah, so Colorado survived. And like you said, Phil, Colorado, their KenPom numbers are great, actually. For what it's worth, Marquette is listed as a 2-point favorite on KenPom over Colorado, who is number 21 on KenPom. So they're way up there for a 10 seed. They have a number 22 offense, number 42 defense. But, yeah, as I scan their KenPom numbers, Phil, I think there are some pretty obvious things both on the positive side as far as things that Marquette could take advantage of and on the negative side, things that worry you. On the things that maybe you that would be in Marquette's favor, Colorado turns it over a bunch. They do not force many turnovers, so the turnover game should work in Marquette's favor. The things that might worry you, Colorado is an excellent shooting team. Effective field goal percentage, 17th in the country. They shoot 39.4% from three. That ranks 6th in the country. Now, they don't attempt a lot, but now there's really only two guys who do attempt a lot of threes. That's KJ Simpson, who's one of the best players in the country, and Da Silva. Other than that, not many guys on that team will attempt threes, but the guys who do shoot it extremely well. Obviously, they're a decent rebounding team. Not elite, but very good. And they obviously have size. So what jumps out to you, Phil, among those things or that I said or anything else that you've noticed?
Well, I think, you know, one, we're not going to see the same pace that Western Kentucky had, right? You know, Colorado plays at, you know, I guess you would say average or a touch above average pace, right? They're KenPom top 100 in pace. So, you know, it's not going to be a frantic breakneck pace like we saw out of the previous game. But yeah, that 3-point shooting really scares you, right? They shot 60% against Florida. Now, that was on 10 attempts. So they were 6 of 10, but you know, if you're going to shoot 60%, that's that you know, and some of that is luck, right? You can't defend 3-point shots without having some either good or bad luck involved. So that's the scary part, is that Colorado is capable of just, you know, going on a blitz and getting some runs. And defensively, they're not bad. You know, I don't think there's anything in particular that jumps out that they're really, really good at defensively. But that offense is going to tax Marquette's defense, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, their offense and Marquette's offense are very close in KenPom. They're 22 and Marquette is 21 right now. So 20. Very close. But yeah, their defense is 42 while Marquette's is 20. But, you know, 42, you have a top 50 defense. There's nothing wrong with that. That's pretty good. And especially if you've got a top 25 offense, a top 50 defense may be good enough, especially if that offense is clicking and a little higher rate than it normally is, that defense isn't going to kill you. But yeah, when I look at how Marquette could beat Colorado, yeah, it starts with that turnover number. That if Marquette ramps up the pressure on defense like they like to do, get those deflections, get out and run a little bit, beat the big man down the floor, get those layups. And thing is, while Colorado does have some nice size, they don't block a ton of shots. Right. They rank
almost dead
like
last.
Way down there. Yeah, like way down there in the country in block shots. So those layups that I talked about earlier that we all love from Cam Jones, Tyler Kolek and you know, Stevie Mitchell has a knack for just finding good space and being able to get two-point baskets himself. You might not see a lot of shots turned back against Colorado because that's just not one of their strengths. So those two things, forcing turnovers and maybe just getting to the basket for two-pointers and not having them sent back in your face, could work in Marquette's advantage.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what'll be interesting, though, is Colorado will be playing their third game in 5 days, right? Like, let's remember they had to beat Boise State in Dayton in a play-in game. So right. They were in Dayton, played a game, traveled to Indy, not that far, but still you had to travel, played a, you know, the afternoon game or later afternoon game against Florida in which 202 points were scored. And then they're going to play against a fast-paced Marquette game, you know, our Marquette team. This is a game where if we have to get into a shootout with them, I'm okay with that, right? Like if it's a fast-paced up and down the court kind of affair, that's got to favor Marquette, you know, just from an endurance standpoint for what's going on, you know, how does Colorado, you know, yes, Oso didn't have a great game against Western Kentucky, but this is an entirely different lineup. You know, what does Eddie Lampkin do to defend? Yes, he's 6'11", but he's on the and I say this as a fellow member of the beefier side of the equation. how does Eddie Lampkin stay with Oso Iguodaro if Oso is either bringing the ball up the court, initiating the offense, turning the corner? You know, if you get Oso going with, you know, with the cross screens with the guards, are they going to be able to guard Oso on the open court? You know, Oso's got that baseline spin. That's going to be a really compelling matchup. Now, on the other end, you know, Lampkin has certainly has weight and maybe a touch of height on Oso. So does he bully Oso around and that sort of thing? You know, especially it's a three-point shooting team, you're not going to dig down, you know, on Lampkin as much because you're afraid of the shooters. But it's going to be some compelling matchup stuff.
Yeah, I could see that matchup going two ways. I mean, I could see it going a good way, and I could see it going a bad way. Like, if it's in the half court when he gets positioning down there on rebounds, I could see him pushing Oso around and getting a lot of rebounds and getting putbacks, and especially if he really gets in there and can get fed in the post, he could get some easy buckets. But I could also see kind of what you're talking about if Oso is handling the ball and Lampkin's got to get out there and guard him. Now, Lampkin knows Oso's not going to shoot, so he's going to dare them. He's going to stay back and say, all right, you know, you're going to have to drive past me. But I think Oso can do that, too. I think Oso can drive right past him. So I will be very curious to see how Marquette and Oso handle that matchup. And, Oso didn't have his best offensive game against Western Kentucky, but I don't anticipate him having many bad games, right? You know, he usually bounces back with a good one. And I would look for him to pick his spots. You know, the thing is, Oso, he's never going to be a guy that Marquette is going to ask to take over a game offensively. Like, you know, Oso, here's the ball, you cook, right? You got to lead us, because there's so many other guys out there who can do that. But they will get him the ball in spots, and when he sees his opportunities, he will take advantage of it, and he will make some slower defenders look really bad. Right. So, yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be a really good game for Oso. I could see how it could go very poorly, but I could also see how it could go very well.
Right, right. Well, and I think it's the second action off of whatever they do with Oso, right? Because Oso's capable of passing to cutters, you know, passing out for the 3-point shot. So I think there's going to be a lot of, all right, how do we force Lampkin to make some tough defensive decisions and see where, if we can just flat out wear him out? Because yes, while they do have some other folks that have size on that team, you know, Tristan Da Silva's 6'9", Cody Williams 6'8", those guys are more of, you know, kind of wings and or kind of David Joplin type figures, right? They're shooters that space the floor and that sort of thing. They're not going to be down, you know, contesting in the paint. So if we can win the matchup against Lampkin, I think that opens up a ton of options for Marquette across the game, right? Whether it's getting Lampkin in into foul trouble because he, you know, he's reaching or slow to guard Oso, or if we get cutters going, whatever, and it, you know, forces him to step up and deny passes, allowing Oso to get drives or whatever. That's going to be the thing I focus on is what happens in that matchup, because everything gets predicated off of that.
Yeah. And I also don't want to just blow past the impact that KJ Simpson could have on this right. game, because he is, I mean, he's probably an NBA talent. He can, I mean, he shoots 44% from three. And again, Colorado doesn't shoot a lot, but he does. And if he decides, well, he's just going to be bombs away and he can shoot a bunch and he can make a bunch, that could be a big, big problem for Marquette on Sunday. I will be curious to see how Marquette handles him defensively. Probably throw a bunch of different guys at him, because you just can't let that guy get loose. Because I think athletically he's going to be a problem for just about anybody that goes up against him. If you put Stevie on him, well, you know, how does that set your other guards up to set up defensively? Marquette's going to have to figure out something there, because he's going to get his. You're not going to shut him down. But right. just to limit his impact so that he does not just, you know, blow you out of the water, because he is a really, really good player.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, it's natural to say, hey, you know, Stevie and or Chase are going to take KJ Simpson the majority of the time, but that's not really the defense Marquette plays, right? They you know, if there's a lot of ball screens being run, Marquette's switching everything. So, you know, any one of the – hell, even Oso could end up on KJ Simpson, right? So everyone's going to be – focused on denying him the three-point shot. Now, luckily, he doesn't – I mean, he takes a fair amount, right? He's made 160 two-pointers, but, you know, that's on a volume of 323, which is, you know, the most by far. I mean, he's taken 170 three-point shots. So he has taken the most shots of anyone on that team. So not that you necessarily stop KJ Simpson, but if you – contain him and limit the damages done he does, like, you know, if he gets 16-18 points, you know, I think I'd make the argument that Marquette's probably likely to win that game, right? You know, if you kind of keep him in check. I mean, he hasn't, you know, just as a reference, I'm looking at him on KenPom, he hasn't scored less than 24. He scored 20 points in a loss against UCLA back in February 15th. The last time he scored less than 20 points was January 20th in a win against Oregon State. So, you know, if he's scoring for them, that's, you know, that's going to be a problem. If you can limit him, then the rest kind of opens up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, Marquette does have a top 20 defense for a reason. So the pressure is going to be important. And they're going to have to absolutely bring it if they want to advance to the next round. But I also think they're ready for it.
To your point, you know, you said, you know, Marquette's got a top 20 KenPom defense. Of the KenPom offenses that Marquette has played this season already and still has a top 20 KenPom, they've played Connecticut three times, Purdue once, Illinois once, Creighton twice, Wisconsin once, and there's, I think, yep, and, oh, well, they've adjusted. St. John's was. Now, this is the thing that's funky. So Colorado has improved their KenPom score as a result of the offensive performance against Florida today. So earlier today, St. John's was a better KenPom offense. Well, in fact, they still are. Yeah, KenPom is a – I didn't resort. So KenPom – St. John's is a KenPom top 19 – or is a 19th rated offense on KenPom. So St. John's twice – Creighton twice, Wisconsin, Purdue, Illinois, Kentucky three times. Right, so Marquette has faced offenses at least as good as Colorado's, with mixed results. But again, those offenses have also come with pretty darn good defenses as well. So all that being said, Colorado represents a significant challenge, but definitely not an insurmountable one.
Look, Marquette is favored in the game. Yeah. Like, I know we, some of our worrywart tendencies, how we got to deal with Colorado, how we got to deal with Colorado. Well, Colorado's got to deal with Marquette, too.
Like, right.
Marquette's favored in the game. It is a neutral site. Colorado was a bigger school, I guess. Maybe I don't know if they'll have more fans there or not, but it is closer to home for Marquette. Marquette's favored in the game. And I like what we did last week, Phil. I'm not necessarily getting into predictions as much as I'm saying you all know what we want to happen, what we hope can happen, and that's what I believe can happen.
Right. Yeah. I don't think we need to predict anything. We don't know what time the game will be yet.
We're recording this Friday night before those are announced, but yeah.
I feel like Marquette has a very good shot at winning this game. Whether they will or not, I mean, we'll see. But having a fully ready-to-go Tyler Kolek, the man played 38 minutes after sitting out 6 weeks. He's back. Totally back. So, you know, and quite frankly, this is probably the healthiest this team's been in, 8 weeks. So,
yep.
There are no excuses for Marquette. It's got to go out and perform. It had a bit of a clunker first half. That's probably adversity it needed to overcome and be like, yeah, no, seriously, we're good. We've got this. Marquette's favored. They should go out and win. Whether they will or not, we're going to find out.
Yep, stuff happens. But do you want to be great or not? And if you want to be great, you want to be remembered, you got to win games like this, and you got to win another game after that, and maybe another game after that. So this is another step in the process. This is exactly where they got last year and got their hearts broken, and they have wanted since that moment was another shot. Now they've got it. Not unlike last year, they're going to have to beat a good team to do it, but I think they're ready for it. And I'm feeling good about it. Let's go Marquette. Let's get another one, and then let's party in Dallas next week. What do you say?
Oh, yeah. I think that would be great. I think you would love to, maybe not in your house, but I'm sure you would be fine with meeting up with some fine Marquette folks and partying it up in Dallas.
The Marquette Club of North Texas is ready to party with all of you if you would like to make the trip to Dallas. We are very excited. There's not a whole lot of us, but we got a few of us. And, these parties get a little more packed as the team has been better over the last couple of years. I hoping to have a nice party here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Not at my house. I don't have room for you guys. Sorry. There will definitely be events in Dallas and stuff like that if Marquette is able to advance. And we'll be talking about that on our next show, hopefully.
Yeah, that's what I'd be excited for Sunday to talk about, hey, Joe, can you give people recommendations on where to go in Dallas and have a good time?
I can absolutely do that. But maybe I'll start getting a list together. But first we'll see our guys get that win on Sunday. I think we went a lot longer than we planned on for a quick little bonus pod.
This was supposed to be a quick after dark pod, and it's a full-fledged pod, but whatever. I had a blast.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got 5 games left this season. We might as well get as many podcasts in as we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Folks, we always appreciate you listening. Hope you enjoyed this little bonus podcast. As always, you can hit us up on X Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks. This is team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. Post a podcast there. You can leave comments on the .com. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Phil, let's see the guys go get another win, and I will talk to you hopefully with more celebration on Sunday evening.
Yeah, let's party Sunday night, hopefully.
All right, seashells and balloons, everybody.